Good morning. We'll call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. Do we have some minutes here? March 12, a couple days ago. I know everybody's read them, so who wants to move?
I've read the minutes. I'm going to move the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Platlin moves the minutes of March 12, 2019. For approval, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Well, we've got a lot of bills here today, and it's going to be back again on tomorrow. So let's I'd like a motion to bring House File 1509, the brand bill, bring that back off the table. Somebody want to move that?
Mr. Chair.
Bring it on back off the table.
Okay. Well, thank you. We got bipartisan support for that, I think. It's going to be a good day. All in favor of bringing 1509 from the table, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Representative Brand, your bill is in front of us here again, and I understand we're not going to take much action today, so if you want to tell us, please.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for having me again here today after a week. We've had a significant amount of collaboration that has occurred, and I think that time was well spent, so I appreciate the opportunity to do that. With the City of Mankato, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and other folks, we were able to come to an agreement on ways to continue to work forward to clean up the Minnesota River to a point where it's less polluted and more enjoyable. And so I would just like to thank the folks for having that opportunity, I'm excited to say. And so at this time, I'm going to ask that we withdraw the bill from the committee.
Representative Brand withdraws his bill from consideration for this morning. So, very good.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry. I'm you know, that's we don't need to do anything. Oh, okay. So that bill has been withdrawn. So next here we have House File 1963. Representative Winkler, please tell us about. I'll move House File 1963 to be in front of us and sent to the General Register.
Mr. Chair, I think the Ways and Means Committee might be a better stop.
Okay. And I'll accept that, and I'll amend my motion, and it will be that House File 1963 be referred to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill is, in its inception, renames Interstate State Park Walter F. Mondale State Park in recognition of Attorney General, Senator, Vice President, and Ambassador Mondale's contributions to the wild and scenic rivers of our nation and conservation in general, and in particular the St. Croix River. If you don't mind, Mr. Chair, I have a video that I'd like to start with that summarizes Mr. Mondale's contributions.
That'd be fine. Please proceed.
You asked me why and how I got into environmental issues. I would say that I love the outdoors. I love the north. I love the wilderness. And every time I'm around it, I'd like to save it and make certain that my kids and their kids and your kids would have just as much chance to be thrilled by that beauty as Joan and I have been during our lifetime.
51 years ago, Minnesota Senator Walter Mondale took the lead with Wisconsin Senator Gaylord Nelson and then Congressman Al Quie and others to pass the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act. It was no small feat to create a national wild and scenic river system that protected rivers in every corner of the United States. Their efforts compare favorably with the efforts of America's greatest conservationists. President Ulysses S. Grant established Yellowstone National Park. It was America's first national park and the beginning of our national park system. President Theodore Roosevelt, in addition to creating 6 new national parks and 16 new national monuments, set aside 230 million acres of public lands in posterity. For his efforts, a national park bears his name. President Franklin Roosevelt's Civilian Conservation Corps planted 1 billion trees, built hundreds of campgrounds and trails, protected 40 million acres of farmland from erosion, and restocked lakes and rivers with almost 1 billion fish. So where does Walter Mondale fit in? Working as a team, he and President Jimmy Carter pushed a law through Congress that protected over 157 million acres of land in Alaska, including national parks, wild and scenic rivers, national forests, and recreation areas. It was the single largest expansion of protected lands in history and more than doubled the size of the national park system. The passage of the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act has meant that segments of 209 rivers in 40 states and Puerto Rico have been protected from development and pollution. That's over 12,700 miles of pristine river and adjacent land that have been saved in perpetuity. One final gift from Mondale and his partners is the St. Croix National Scenic Riverway, which is part of the National Park System. Today we treasure the 252 miles of beautiful and protected waterways in Minnesota and Wisconsin, along both the St. Croix and Namekagon Rivers.
When Joan and I were dating, I took her on a canoe trip down the St. Croix River. We were in that canoe for an hour and a half, and it worked. And we were married, I think, a month later. So it's the love of the beauty that I think we all share here tonight, romance, and, as I say in my book, religion. I think there's a moral dimension to these issues.
So, Mr. Chair and members, just to start, I think we don't always remember the contributions of people who have changed the world that we live in. And while many of us, you know, we all, as public officials and elected officials, want to do what's right, we want to make a difference in our lives, we don't necessarily expect that the difference that we make will be remembered by the people it benefits. And I've had the privilege of knowing Mr. Mondale for, well over 20 years. And he is a statesman, and he has affected the lives, improved the lives, and the landscape of Minnesota in profound ways. And I thought that this was the right time to try to recognize that accomplishment and that contribution. I do think that, you know, one state park is not an overly large recognition for who he is and what he has done. And I think it would be a good reminder that the choices that we make today, or rather that these are choices. Preserving wild and scenic areas, protecting the outdoors are choices that we make every generation, and that they are not, in fact, far from automatic or givens that this will continue. And so I think a part of the benefit of recognizing Mr. Mondale's contribution to the St. Croix is to serve as education and a reminder that it takes leadership and vision to preserve the outdoors and preserve the wilds of our country. And so I hope that we can contribute by doing that. I asked for the bill to be sent to the Ways and Means Committee because it does need some further consideration. I've met this week with folks in Taylor's Falls who expressed concern about particularly Interstate Park being renamed. And so we are exploring other parks in the St. Croix region or other ways of recognizing Mr. Mondale's contribution And so we will continue to work on that and make sure that we are honoring the concerns and interests of the folks in the region of the St. Croix, where there is pretty widespread support for doing something. Whether Interstate Park is exactly the right place is a different question, and we will continue that conversation in the Environment Finance Committee, which is why I asked that it be referred to Ways and Means. Mr. Chair, I think there are some testifiers. I should also say that this effort is not in any – this is not something that Mr. Mondale was aware that we were going to do. This was something that we did and let him know about afterwards. And the volunteer work to put together this film is done by John Call, who many of you know for his photography and videography work, who has also produced a film about the St. Croix region. So this is all volunteer work to recognize a hero of mine, and I think a person who has made a very significant contribution to our country and to our state and its natural places. So, Mr. Chair, I would ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. And do you do have testifiers that you have
not, bring not, up? Not for me, Mr. Chair, but I think there are people who wish to testify.
Okay. So I'll make the ask right now. Are there folks out there that want to testify on this bill, House File 1963? Just respectfully request that keep it to a couple minutes if you can, please.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources, and thank you for the opportunity to testify on this important bill today. We did have the opportunity to meet with the author about the importance contributions that Walter Mondale has provided to the state of Minnesota, and the department fully appreciates that work. We'd be a different state without that. However, we do have concerns about naming units of the Outdoor Recreation Act after people. We're taking a stronger look at naming of places and really feel the legacy of why state park recreation areas and trails are created by statute. They're created to preserve and protect special places. The philosophy that has been in place that public lands are special because of significant scenic, geological, cultural, or ecological features, not for the public servants and stewards that have fought to set them aside. Good example of this has been Wild River State Park, acknowledging Minnesota's first wild and scenic river, Grand Portage State Park, acknowledging the cultural history of the place, and Bluffland State Trail, acknowledging one of Minnesota's unique and stunningly scenic geological areas. With that, we are more than happy and ready and willing to work with the author and the stakeholders to determine what should be done to recognize the important contributions to the state of Minnesota from Vice President Walter Mondale. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Michael D. Buchheit. I'm the current mayor of the city of Taylor's Falls. I've been their mayor for the last 17 years. I was just reelected to my ninth term. Now, the first thing I'd like to do is thank Representative Winkler. He came to Taylor's Falls Monday evening, spent over an hour with us. I appreciate the fact that he listened to what our concerns were. He actually shared his vision for what he would like to do. Now, what I do as mayor is I always like to take the time to reach out to my residents, especially our local historian, ask them a little bit about the Interstate State Park. I'm going to briefly share with you a little bit of the history of the Interstate State Park. The Interstate Park was actually established in 1895. It was a park that was supposed to be in two states, and it is, Minnesota and Wisconsin, thus the name Interstate State Park. Now, the present name is the only name that has been used, and it's been used for many generations. We look at it as a neutral name. It does not honor or credit any individual or any group. However, there was a legislative bill back in 1895 that states that the park was supposed to be named the State Park of the Dalles of the St. Croix. We have no idea why that ever did not happen, but it never happened. Now, the brainchild who thought of the parks, he actually worked very long and hard to preserve this land. He is the one who helped create both of them, and his vision was that the parks need to remain open to the public and remain as pristine as possible. Now, he actually served as the commissioner, the first, the third, and the fifth commissioner for the Minnesota Interstate State Park. And we don't recommend changing the name to the name after the founder. In fact, I'm concerned it might actually hinder some individuals from coming to our state park to climb on the rocks. The founder's name was George H. Hazard. So the Hazard State Park might not be a good idea. However, while we were talking Monday night, our conversation kind of shifted, and we started shifting from changing the name of the park because we felt 298 acres really is not a significant size park to name after, to have somebody named after that has contributed as significantly as Vice President Mondale has. So our conversation actually shifted to a potential scenic byway. And I would actually really once again like to thank Representative Winkler, because this byway would actually start in Hastings and goes all the way to Sandstone. It actually already exists as a scenic byway. It includes five state parks. And again, thanking Representative Winkler for his commitment, because he said the word that has stuck with me ever since Monday night. He said this would be like a necklace with five jewels. And he said pearls. I said diamonds. Now, again, I'd like to thank Representative Winkler. We think that a bypass is a much better option than simply renaming the Interstate State Park. So, again, thank you for your time. What I'm going to do is introduce Wade Vitalis. If you've ever been to Taylor's Falls, you've eaten at the drive-in, or you've played at the Adventure Falls Mini Golf, he's the owner. He's very involved in our city. He's been on our Economic Development Commission for over 20 years. He served as chair, and he actually served as the on the governor's design team. So thank you for your time.
Thanks for your testimony. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Wade Vitalis. I grew up in the St. Clair River, just down from Interstate State Park. And I'm here representing the voices of my neighbors and my ancestors. I want to first express my sincere gratitude for the opportunity to participate in the conversation around how to best honor Vice President Mondale, a person for whom I have the utmost respect and admiration. My great-great-grandfather, Jonas Lindahl, immigrated from Sweden in 1857. At age 17 in 1861, he joined the Union Army and fought until the end of the war. He became the first Swedish immigrant and the first Minnesota State Senator from Sweden in 1871. Besides defending our country and serving in elective office, our Swedish ancestors brought to America rich traditions, including a tradition called Almansrot, literally translated means every man's right to have access to the wilderness and the freedom to roam. A Swedish clerk of my great-grandfather's was elected in 1891 to the Minnesota House and represented Taylor's Falls. It was in the tradition of Almansrot that August J. Anderson began working with volunteers and advocates to create a state park at a place known as the Dells of the St. Croix in Taylor's Falls. Established in 1895, Interstate State Park would preserve the glacial gardens and the breathtaking views of the St. Croix River Valley at the Dells forever. Why is Interstate State Park such an important name that myself and others have asked that it be preserved? In 1895, the idea of Interstate Park was radical. It required for the first time in history that two states work together to preserve a national treasure. In so doing, they created the second park in the state of Minnesota, the first state park in Wisconsin, and the first ever Interstate State Park in the country. While this is certainly groundbreaking, was most importantly an example for future generations. Fast forwarding 72 years to 1968, when another groundbreaking idea would set an example for future generations in the country, it involved two men, one from Minnesota and one from Wisconsin. We believe the founding of our Interstate State Park and of the Wild and Scenic Riverway Act are significant and related historical events, and that they are linked, that Senator Mondale was building upon the earlier work of the preservationists for who felt the name Interstate State Park sent a message to future generations. We humbly offer the suggestion that instead of changing the name of Interstate Park, that the existing St. Croix Scenic Byway that currently connects by road and river the entire length of the St. Croix River in Minnesota be designated as a National Scenic Byway, and that the name be changed to the Walter Mondale National Scenic Byway. Instead of one park, the National Scenic Byway would include all five state parks on the Minnesota side. The entire length and breadth of the St. Croix River encompassing the grandeur and telling the story of Vice President Mondale's legacy at each location in its totality. Preserving the name Interstate State Park is the right thing to do, as is honoring the legacy of a great statesman such as Walter Mondale. With a treasure worthy of the gift that he has given to us all, it's also the right thing to do. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Do we have any other testifiers in the audience? Seeing none, member questions? Seeing none, some final comments?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate your time this morning. As I think you've heard, we are committed to finding a path forward to honor the legacy of Vice President Mondale and doing so in a way that best fits with the character and tradition of the St. Croix Valley. And so for the sake of coming to a final resolution, I would ask that you support the motion and move this on to the Ways and Means Committee.
Very good. I'll renew my motion that House File 1963 be referred to Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Winkler. Okay. I'm going to just take a short pause here, no recess or anything, but Representative Dabney is supposed to be on his way down here from another committee, and I'd like to keep the order we have, if that's possible. I'll give him a couple minutes, so... I'm guessing in the interest of time. Oh, here we go. All I had to do is say something. Welcome, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for delaying the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today.
Not a problem. Busy around here lately. Move that House File 2220 be referred to Ways and Means, and with a recommendation that it go to Environment Finance. Please tell us about your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2020 takes a step back and looks at the multiple dimensions of Minnesota's outdoor recreation economy. We have many stakeholders in this area. Families like mine that look to recreate for the opportunity to be together as a family, as well as all of the psychological, social, and physical benefits of outdoor recreation. Tourists who are attracted to Minnesota to fish and snowmobile and paddle their canoes or kayaks. Recreation businesses, whether they're seasonal mom-and-pop operations or year-round resorts, camps, restaurants, outfitters, and others. The manufacturing industries in Minnesota. Think of Polaris and Arctic Cat and the key role that those outdoor industries play in our local and regional economies. And, of course, retailers, the folks who sell us the stuff that we put on our feet or put under our cells as we go out into the out-of-doors and enjoy it. There's also this growing recognition, not just the economic, direct economic benefits of outdoor recreation, but the psychological, spiritual, and physical benefits of that. And we know that there's a growing outdoor recreation economy, and that, in fact, we have people moving to Minnesota to access our outdoor recreation opportunities. So there's a number of different stakeholders in this process, including local, regional, state, and federal government. One of the challenges we have, however, is equity and inclusion in this zone. We know that the younger population in Minnesota is far more diverse than is, folks my age in Minnesota, and that those more diverse populations may have different relationship with the out-of-doors, different experiences, different expectations. Frankly, if you've immigrated from a desert country, the idea of 10,000 lakes is kind of an odd one. And what do you do with all that water, and how do you do it safely? What House File 2020 envisions is a outdoor recreation office that allows us to break through the jurisdictional agency and other boundaries and jurisdictions to create one space where all of the stakeholders can come together, work collectively to enhance the outdoor recreation industry and opportunity for all of Minnesota. With me today, and I'm not sure who wants to go first, are representatives from the Children and Nature Network as well as REI, one of the major retailers in this space. And did you guys figure out who goes first?
Go ahead.
All right. Well, fine. Did that work? You got it figured. Okay.
Yep.
So please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Mark Bereka. I'm Director of Government and Community Affairs for REI Co-op. Outdoor recreation is an economic gem hiding in plain sight. As we've just discussed, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of firms that are in the recreation economy ecosystem in Minnesota. They can be guides, they can be outfitters, they can be designers and developers of products, they can be retailers like ourselves at the co-op. REI is super proud to be part of this ecosystem. We have hundreds of employees in Minnesota. We buy product and then distribute it throughout the rest of the country from at least 24 Minnesota-based companies. And importantly, we have almost 500,000 co-op members in the state of Minnesota. REI is often thought of as a big player in the outdoor recreation economy, but truth be told, it's a very big pond, and we're a decent-sized fish, but not the biggest fish. Minnesota has actually 140,000 people directly employed by the outdoor recreation economy. Consumers spend $17 billion. That generates $1.4 billion in state and local taxes. The challenge for the outdoor recreation sector is that we're broadly spread. That's a strength in some regards, but this bill can help us overcome some of our sector's shortcomings. It's a strength in that users of the outdoors are spread across the entire state of Minnesota. People love to get out into the outdoors wherever they live, whether that's in a rural town or here. It's especially important to note that outdoor recreation is an economic driver in some of the most rural parts of the state. But we're fragmented. People can be very parochial about their favorite activity. People can be very parochial about their favorite type of trail or about their favorite type of product. What outdoor recreation offices have done in other states is they've served as conveners and they've served as silo busters. They bring together the passionate people who love the outdoors and have said we must serve a higher purpose, not just our interest in fishing or in hiking or in snowmobiling, but collectively what can we do? And not just our interest in a particular agency's activities, but what can we do together? In Wyoming, they've created a sub-cabinet of all agencies, and their mission is to make government more efficient, to maximize the return on investment in recreation infrastructure. In Washington State, we have a big tent coalition, and we partner with the legislative caucus that week in, week out during session tries to optimize the management of legislation that touches on any part of outdoor recreation. And so bringing all stakeholders together collaboratively can drive enormous benefits. The benefits are beyond economic. They are to the well-being of our children, to the well-being of us as human beings, our physical and mental health, to the cohesion of our communities, and to the well-being of our planet. And so we would urge, as a co-op, Minnesota to join the movement that's occurring across the country to create these offices. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee, Representative Dabney. My name is Laura Milan. I am here on behalf of the Children and Nature Network. We are a nonprofit organization working to address the fact that over the past few generations, and just a few generations, childhood has truly moved indoors. And this has really serious implications for our children, for the future of the wild places that we love, and Minnesota's outdoor recreation economy. And we know that kids of color and kids in low-income communities have even less access to outdoor recreation and high-quality green space than their peers. We are an evidence-based organization, so everything I share with you today is based on science, and I have reams of studies to back them up. But we're working in 20 U.S. cities, including Minneapolis and St. Paul, and around the world. We advance the evidence base that is clearly indicating that regular, unstructured time outdoors, outdoor recreation, is absolutely critical for children's healthy development. Or as we like to say, nature makes kids happier, healthier, and smarter. So let's take a look at healthier. Kids today are spending approximately 44 hours per week in front of a screen of some kind, and on average, less than 10 minutes a day playing outdoors. This lack of physical activity has led to serious health implications and problems for too many kids for too long. They are on the fast track for a lifetime of chronic disease. But kids who spend time outdoors in nature, they're more physically active and more physically fit. Playing outdoors promotes all the great things that childhood brings: development of core strength, balance, agility, development of gross motor skills. And this is a new set of studies coming out. Time spent in bright sunlight is essential for developing healthy vision. Myopia, nearsightedness in children, has risen 25% over the past 40 years and is now directly linked to kids not spending time outdoors. So that's healthier. Let's talk about happier. Multiple studies show that spending time outdoors together as a family increases and strengthens family bonds. And we know that active outdoor families support a variety of Minnesota businesses, nonprofit causes, and environmental concerns. Spending time in nature reduces stress, anxiety, promotes positive moods, and improves social functioning in children. The phytochemicals in trees and other factors actually reduce blood pressure and heart rate. Unstructured outdoor time in nature provides opportunities for kids to take risks, develop problem-solving skills, build self-esteem and a sense of agency. And we know that the greater time in nature, the greater the benefit. The more time you spend outdoors, the more benefit you receive. Which leads us to smarter. Without a doubt, outdoor recreation, outdoor learning, nature-based activities improve academic outcomes. Regular physical activity, which tends to be greater when you spend time outdoors, improves brain function in children. When kids learn and play in natural environments, we see improved performance in reading, writing, math, science, and social studies. And you'll also find enhanced creativity and executive function, fewer behavior problems, and increased engagement and enthusiasm for learning. Time in nature also helps kids develop a love of outdoor places and develops a conservation ethic. We take care of the things that we care about, and this is critical for the future of our natural resources and our natural places. I'm really thankful to share this information with you today in support of Minnesota's Office of Outdoor Recreation. In some ways, we think it mirrors kind of what we do for the Children and Nature Movement. When this movement got started about 15 years ago and really started picking up speed, the Children and Nature Network thought that our role would be to support organizations doing great work, let 1,000 flowers bloom. And in fact, there are many and were many and continue to be many organizations doing great work on the ground, chipping away at this huge societal shift. Society has moved indoors, and progress is being made, but not fast enough to keep up with the trend of childhood moving indoors. What we have learned is that by playing a coordinating role, advancing the evidence base, promoting innovative strategies, convening leaders, driving broad policy change, we are driving more progress more quickly. And there is some urgency. The first generation of really tech-savvy kids, indoor kids, they are now becoming parents. And kids in low-income communities and communities of color continue to experience more barriers and less access to outdoor recreation than their peers. And this is really troubling because we know that nature-based learning, outdoor recreation, it's a great strategy for reducing health and academic achievement gaps. And all kids deserve to experience the wonder of nature. So on behalf of the Children and Nature Network, we'd like to provide our support for the Minnesota Office of Outdoor Recreation to help secure a healthier future for our kids and Minnesota's natural places. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there other testifiers on this bill? But Commissioner Meyer walking down, okay. Please introduce yourself and proceed, Mr. Meyer.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources, and thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Did have the opportunity to sit down with the author yesterday and express some of our concerns with the bill. We support outdoor recreation and diversity and inclusion at the highest level. We talked very in-depth with Representative Becker Finn on our No Child Left Inside bill and the activities we do. And I'm proud to say we'll be displaying our ICANN programs in the Capitol Rotunda here shortly to show what we do to outreach to everybody to bring them into the system. And luckily, the legislature supports this as well. Back in 1975, they established the Outdoor Recreation Act, which is in Chapter 86A, which goes on to say 86A.02, the legislature finds the unique natural, cultural, and historical resources of Minnesota provide abundant opportunities for outdoor recreation and education, and finds that these opportunities should be made available to all citizens of Minnesota now and for the future. It talks about preservation and utilization and the establishment of the system. And actually, in 86A.03, it defines what outdoor recreation is. And it's everything that we talk about. It's hunting, it's fishing, it's camping, it's kayaking, it's mountain biking, it's off-road recreation, it's motorized and non-motorized. It's, if you look at the language, it's very broad, and it covers everything that the department has responsibility of. We do have some concerns about the language as drafted. We were never consulted in the development of the language, and we think it has a few problems in there. Providing another office on lines 1.13 to 1.14 to coordinate outdoor recreational policy and management among state and federal agencies and local government entities. What does that mean? Now we'll have somebody come in and say that in state forests, it's appropriate to do this, but not to do that, or the hierarchy would be provide outdoor recreation, not timber utilization. How does it deal with our Minnesota's natural resource-based economy and recreation, which is a role the DNR has? As you know, we focus on recreation, outdoor activities and conservation. The tourism, timber, and taconite, as we call it, need to all work together. We can't have one side of the bubble popping out or not. We support the concept wholeheartedly and want to do whatever we can to support our outdoor recreation in the state of Minnesota. However, this is not one Minnesota. One Minnesota is bringing all the stakeholders together to talk about what is the future of outdoor recreation and how do we deal with it, rather than have a bill come in here and try to create something that may or may not need to be created, but we should have a conversation with all stakeholders within the outdoor recreation system and all cultures within the state of Minnesota on how they want to recreate. So we support the concept, however, we cannot support the bill as drafted or the establishment of the office in this bill. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Other testifiers on the bill? Welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Tom Hackbarth. I'm here to represent the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota. We are opposed to the bill as it is. The All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota has been around about 35 years. This is our 35th anniversary, and we've been at the Capitol every year trying to make outdoor recreation for ATVs much better, giving folks a place to ride. We have said that from the very beginning. If we establish trails, put people on trails, they won't be running all over the country and doing bad things. And that has worked very successfully. Another thing that All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota has done is establish a youth education program. That's worked very well as also. And we've been coordinating with the DNR for many years and trying to make that program better and better, and we're very successful with that. If you look at the statistics on actual trails that are out there, most accidents are happening by people from youth and people that have not had our training, and it's usually on private property. Out on the public trails, you don't see those kinds of fatalities and injuries that are going on. So we've worked very, very well with the DNR over the last 35 years, and we do things like education. We do things like promoting our sport. I think this just adds another layer of bureaucracy that is going to make things more difficult to keep moving forward. So the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota does oppose this bill as it stands. Stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony. Let me just see if we've got other testifiers out there real quick. And then we'll, let's do that, and then we'll go to questions, if that's okay. Please introduce yourself.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Doug Franzen, and I represent the Minnesota Snowmobilers Association. I think this bill has a germ of a really good idea, but frankly, it needs a lot of work. And for us, we support the goals of that. In fact, I was speaking with another lobbyist who took a snowmobiling trip up to our great north, up around Crane Lake. And he reported amazing snowmobiling, but he also reported that he ran into a group of 20 snowmobilers. And he didn't think they were particularly good snowmobilers, novices. Well, what had happened is 20 people from California flew to Minnesota, went to a resort, rented 20 snowmobiles, had a ball, and they're going to go back to California and tell more people. I think that type of experience is the goal of this bill. And again, I think the bill does need more work. That we've heard some of the issues thus far, but we would pledge to be part of that work. And wherever this goes, we will be engaged with the author and with others to move forward and have the best legislation absolutely possible.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
One more, looks like. Maybe a couple. Okay. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, Dan Larson, Minnesota Four-Wheel Drive Association. Thanks for the ability to comment on this bill. Right now, we're gonna weigh in as being skeptical on the bill. We haven't run it through our process, but the reason for that is our group is misunderstood. These are 90%, 95% Jeep drivers that are looking for more ways to recreate through forests and even private parks in the state, and we have built, through the last 12 years I've been with the group, relationships within the DNR that have been hard fought, and we're still building them. When you think of a four-wheel drive vehicle, it's often larger, more aggressive kind of machines. And right now, I have to tell you, we have spent 10 years working to build relationships in places that we recreate there isn't a civic leader, law enforcement, mayor, anyone in those towns, in Gilbert or Appleton, who wouldn't give a glowing response to the relationships that we built. We're a little concerned about shifting that over into other agencies because we know it's fragile. And Mr. Chair and members, this is a group that is on the move. I want you to watch this. There's a bill right now that's going to be coming through, border-to-border touring routes. That is the strategy with the group is you've got to do something big to get on the map and to start showing people who you are and how you recreate. So we anticipate with this border-to-border, you're going to start in Cook County and end at the North Dakota border, and we ended in Pembina at the Canadian border because North Dakota told us when they got wind of the route, the touring route, put it up here because that'll give us a good link, a starting point to build across our state. So there's that project and 17 others in our queue. And we've got, because we haven't had a lot of projects to spend money on, we've got a very healthy off-road vehicle account. So right now, we're going to be skeptical on the bill. We appreciate you bringing it forward, Representative. And that's my testimony.
Thanks for your testimony. Any other testifiers? Seeing none, let's go to questions. And I have Representative Luke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess for the bill author, do we have anybody here from the Department of Transportation? Have you conferred with anybody as to exactly what the interface would be with the Department of Transportation should this bill go forward?
I'm sorry. I was not paying attention. I was looking at who's next. So,
all right. So, Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, that's part of the ongoing conversation. I think what you're illustrating is there are multiple stakeholders who all have an interest in the outdoor recreation opportunity and industry here, and we need to have a place where they can all come together. Thank you for pointing that out.
A follow-up, it would really be great if we could have those folks here and be part of that as opposed to sitting here in the blind. We're talking about putting a requirement on a both on a position, a new position apparently, and another agency. It would seem like it'd be appropriate that we would talk to those folks first and had them available here to answer questions. But is there anybody here from the Department of Deed directly that can speak to this, or have you spoken with anybody from the department on this issue?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, you'll have to ask other agencies why they're not present. The hearing was publicly noticed.
Representative Lewick?
thank you. I guess am I correct then that you didn't request that they comment on this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, I hope to have ongoing conversations with all the stakeholders. That's the idea behind the bill, is drawing those multiple stakeholders across jurisdictional lines with agencies, local governments, as Mr. Hackbarth pointed out, and Mr. Larson, local regional government agencies, state and federal. We need a place where all of those stakeholders can come together.
Well, as we, Mr. Chair, thank you, and to the bill author, well, I guess it would be great if we could start right here and have those people available so we could hear what their perspective is, because as we all know, these things go forward and then they're put into law, and then it's too late. I mean, this kind of seems like the horse and cart here mixed up. Another question, I noticed that for whatever reason, was it a mistake that we left out the Department of Education for the consultation and a requirement? I heard some very compelling testimony from one of the testifiers here that we've got a huge, particularly problem, I think, with the young folks unable to get out. I think they spend 5 days a week, basically an eight-hour block tied up in school. So why specifically wouldn't the Department of Education be part of this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, Minnesota Science Standards do direct do include standards that direct opportunities for outdoor engagement for students. And many schools send their students for days or for several days or maybe up to a week to environmental learning centers that are scattered across the state, to various camps operated by nonprofits. So that piece is already baked in. I think we, you know, the legislative process is a deliberative one, and I welcome that. That's why moving this bill forward and allowing the conversation to continue is so important. But in my way of thinking, what this office does is invite the questions and not presuppose the answers.
A follow-up, I guess, maybe we could have Mr. Meyer come back, because I'd like to find out whether would make more sense to, if we're going to expand government here, that we put some type of position within the DNR. And I would like to also find out where the DNR is right now on staffing relative to be able to carry out the missions that they're doing on behalf of outdoor recreation. So if, I don't know if Mr. Meyer's still in the room. Oh, here he is.
I see him. Welcome back, Mr. Meyer. Please just say your name again, and did you hear the question?
Mr. Chairman, members, yes, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. And we've spoke about this in committee before. So we have many different, we call it R3, recruitment, retention, and renewal opportunities within the agency, not only in parks and trails, but in fish and wildlife. All of our other agencies are divisions are working closely with that. We have a cross-divisional team to look at that. One of the thoughts is this would probably fit better in DNR than in the Office of Tourism. A lot of the things I outlined, especially the coordination among outdoor recreation policy and management, that's within our statutes, within our purview. It's the duties and administration under Chapter 84 that the commissioner has. So it's one of the ongoing things that needs to be discussed. As I mentioned, we sat down with the author and the stakeholders. I think there is support to move forward with a broad policy position to try to figure out how do we do this the right way and include everybody throughout the state who wants to spend time in the state of Minnesota outdoors, either in wintertime, summertime, doing what they want to do. But let's bring them together and have a conversation to decide what we should have in place.
Just the second part of the question, maybe right now from a staffing standpoint, where are we at? You know, I don't want to get into details on state rec areas. I know we've had some situations where across state parks, state rec areas, in our motorized vehicle area, even in the conservation officers, where we don't have those positions filled yet. So I guess the gut question is, why would we create another position over here if we're having issues on trying to pull the freight train on outdoor recreation now? I mean, are we close to 100% manned in that whole broad arena? I know that's a pretty general question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lewick, you know, we try to retain the best employees that we can and hire the best we can. Obviously, it's a pretty fruitful labor market out there right now, and finding the professionals in the outdoor recreation industry, if not the industry, but people with outdoor recreation, STEM, tech, science, technology, engineering, math is very challenging for state government right now, as for all people across those technologies. Our conservation officers, we're always challenging trying to keep those filled as they seem to retire just as fast as we hire new ones. So we aren't at 100%. I don't think we're ever at 100% complement, but we try to do the best we can to make sure that our parks, our state rec areas, are staffed and have the people with the knowledge to provide our customers, our citizens, the residents of the state of Minnesota, the opportunities they expect and deserve.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, do we have anybody here from Explore Minnesota? Obviously, they'd be a big player in here, because the assumption would be that if they're going to appoint the individual, then I guess they would become part of their office.
I don't see anybody coming forward.
Well, I guess we'll never know. I guess we'll never know, Mr. Chair. Maybe
maybe the bill author can explain then to you, I mean, exactly what would be the intention and what would be the relationship with the individual that would appoint this position.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lewick, I think if we keep doing what we've been doing, we'll keep getting what we've been getting. I think change is hard, and I think we're seeing that here in front of the committee. I think government reform is hard, and I think we're seeing that as well here in front of the committee. I think it's also difficult for an agency to coordinate across other agencies. One agency then is seen as owning it and isn't always perceived, rightly or wrongly, as playing well with the other agencies. That's why we need to do something different. And that's why placing this office in the Office of Tourism, which has a little different perspective and a little different relationship, rather than one of the more driving agencies, is key. As I said, reform is hard, but I believe that we can do that.
Mr. Chair, I agree that reforming or moving agencies is a tall task. I think we all labor at that. I guess another question would be, is this in the governor's budget, and where's the governor? Because I found that a really aggressive governor can really move agencies. In fact, if I remember right, the commissioners serve at his pleasure or her pleasure. So where's the governor on this? Have you consulted with him, and is this a part of his budget?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lewick, we're a co-equal branch of government.
We agree on that one, too, Representative Dabney. So thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess we'll have to, anybody here from the governor's office that wishes to speak?
Not me. From the governor.
I see we've got another individual apparently would like to testify, and don't get me wrong here, Representative Dabney. It makes sense. We're literally the recreational capital of the Midwest. There's no question about that. So we got to constantly push the bubble on making sure that we open this opportunity to everybody, starting with Minnesotans, obviously, and then bring in all those rich folks that live around the surrounding states and across the world. I think we probably need to pull back and maybe look at a little bit different direction here on this particular bill. So with that, and I see we've got another individual that might want to testify, or maybe he's got some answers to the questions. So I'll just give her back to the chair here.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. And please introduce
sure.
yourself for the record.
And Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Joel Carlson, and I've long been involved in tourism, outdoor recreation issues here at the Capitol on behalf of the small resorting community, and I'm a member of the Explore Minnesota Tourism Public Policy Committee. We have a committee that reviews all of the legislative proposals that come to us, and we haven't had a chance to look at this one yet, and I think that's the response that you're getting from a lot of people that are involved. We absolutely support the concept of promoting tourism and outdoor recreation, and we have many of you around the table that have been laboring to do that for decades. We just had, as a public policy group at EMT, we haven't had an opportunity to review this. We're happy to do so at a next meeting. But EMT as a group, with the money that you've appropriated, and Representative Fabian has been supportive of, and Heintzman, promotes outdoor recreation in Minnesota. They use resorts as their theme. It is clearly something that is a focus of what EMT does right now, and in conjunction with our agency partners. And I think an opportunity to see how this would blend, this concept would blend with the existing work that's going on is a good one, and we're happy to look at it, but we just haven't taken, I don't think EMT, I know our policy committee has not taken a position, and we're happy to do it, but we just haven't at this point. You asked us, and now you know.
Thanks for your testimony. So we've got some more on the list here. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair and members, I think this is the third kind of theme day we've had, or
where people are talking about how to get more people involved in the outdoors. So we heard it when the DNR did presentations. We heard it with Representative Becker Finn, and now we're hearing it with Representative Davenport. And I hear common themes throughout all those, that a recognition that Minnesota is changing and a recognition that we need to get more people outdoors. I think it probably would benefit us to get outdoors when we're trapped in here for 8 hours a day. So I'm going to try to get out during the noon hour. But I think we keep getting presented the data that it's important for kids and us as humans to get outdoors and be outside. So I think that's where there's a common ground. I think what it was interesting to me, I heard the words skepticism, misunderstood, fear, not consulted, from the testifiers, including the DNR. And that might actually prove the point of the need for your bill or something like that, of bringing people together, that we have efforts going on trying to resolve what I think the state has recognized as a need, and the need is changing because we have a changing state. So the established outdoor recreation sports, of some of which we heard from, there may be people who are not stakeholders but are just people who want to get involved, that we recognize that there's a need to get them involved, whatever they do, whether it's the silent sports or whether it's the mechanized sports or it's wherever it is in the state. So I think there is an opportunity here to find some way of coordinating better, because we're hearing there's a need from folks who may not already be engaged. And how we do that, I think, Representative Davenport, your bill goes to government operations from here. Is that correct? Or?
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Representative Davenport.
The chair's motion was to Ways and Means with a recommendation for a re-referral to Environment Finance.
Okay. So that conversation could continue, and hopefully there's more engagement with folks about this rather than having the conversation stop here. When I listen to whether it's the DNR or when we had testimony with Representative Becker Finn or your testimony both for and against, the piece that's always the same is that we need to do something to try to reach people a little better. And so I would encourage the conversation continuing, but I ask you to reach out particularly to the folks that testify, but also people who may not be here today because they're working or they may not be aware of how this system works. And need to have a voice. So in town meetings and in things like that, try to get people involved who don't normally have a seat at the table. So I would support moving it on to continue the conversation.
Thank you.
You know, I'm just going to interject real quick. We have secured this room till noon, so hopefully we have time to get through all our bills here, and it'll make Thursday evening a little less onerous. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought the testimony from the lady from the Children and Nature Network was excellent, concerning some of the statistics that she gave us. And the one about 44 hours a week that the kids spend in front of a screen is concerning, to say the least. And I also agree with the benefits of kids being outdoors. You know, my kids grow on the farm, and taken for granted, having them go out in the pasture to check on the cows or spend a Saturday picking rocks out in the field, getting the benefits of being outside and in a work ethic. But my question is, could she share that testimony with us, the committee members, because it really points out the benefit of being outdoors and the concern of how much time kids spend looking at a screen today.
Well, Representative Anderson, will request that be given to us in writing. And I see a positive response. Thank you. So if you would make sure, just send it to the chair's office, if you would, please. Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, I'd encourage you to sign on to my bill as well, No Child Left Inside.
Representative Lisbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know,
I think it's a wonderful bill, but I do have concerns myself. In Greater Minnesota, you know, we're trying to diversify and create tourism, so I think it's wonderful to bring them to the table. But I, listening to the testimony, it didn't seem like everybody was a part of it. And so I thought Representative Hansen brought up some really, really good points for this to move forward. It would mean a lot to bring everybody to the table. So at the next stage of this, that they're sitting here testifying in support of your bill. You know, I went riding this weekend, that I got two Polarises from Representative Fabian's neck of the woods, and we figured it out when we sat there and ate. We stopped at multiple spots, 14 of us, the people who groom the trails, the people that do all of this, and we're very, very excited. They're so passionate about it, and it's about $100 a day. So for every person on a sled with gas and oil and stops, it's about $100 a day. And for Northeast Minnesota, that's a lot for small communities. And so when we're having these discussions, we're talking about nature, we're talking about kids being involved and engaged and understanding it, and you're talking about tourism, let's make sure that everybody at the table and all these different clubs are a part of it, because I think they can really help shape the bill so it's successful moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you for that. And Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just to follow up on Representative Lislegard's comments, Representative Dabney, I think you missed a really good opportunity to get your bill off on the right foot. I think if you would have engaged people right away, the Department of Health, you've got named in here, transportation, you've got education component. If you would have engaged those folks right away, I think that you would have had an opportunity to move that bill through here fairly rapidly. But I want to address, and in your opening comments, you didn't reference, you named Polaris and Arctic Cat. There's nobody in this building that knows those two businesses better than I do, I don't think. And I have, for a long time, advocated for, and I think we've missed a golden opportunity here in the metro area. We have 389 miles of trails in the metro park system, and not a single mile for an ATV. And I think they told us there was 12 miles of snowmobile trails here in the metro trail system. It's a huge opportunity that's being missed, and we continue to be met with skepticism by many of the metro legislators about what snowmobiles and ATVs actually are. When I've had bills here and amendments to try to expand ATV opportunities, they've been met with resistance because they've been portrayed as being noisy, smoky, dangerous, vehicles that we don't want them around. And I hope that as this bill moves forward, that people will begin to realize how significantly they can benefit local economies because people ride them. And again, I'll go back to what I said. You talked something about equity in your comments. We need some equity here in the metro area for owners of ATVs and snowmobiles so that they, I like that they come up to our district to ride them. I get that. But on the occasions that they can't get away, they want to go for an evening ride or whatever, they have an opportunity almost outside their back doors. Thank you.
Well, Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I am actually very grateful for this discussion. I particularly, when Representative Anderson talked about the ability of his children to pick rocks. And my children have had similar opportunities because we too have a farm, much smaller, but we do have a farm. But I think it's very difficult to understand for people who do have the opportunities to pick rocks and that children in the metro don't have the same opportunities. And I'm going to give you one example that's frustrated me no end. And I don't even know that I've ever shared this with Representative Dabney. But we have good bike trails in Minneapolis. And you can go round and round and round. But you can't get out into the DNR system. there are only a couple of opportunities now, one in the Northeast Metro in St. Paul, to get out for somebody who wants to just maybe take their family out on a family biking outing. You can't go south. You can't go along the Minnesota River. You can't, on a weekend trip, you can't do it because there are not these connections. And I think what you are bringing up to us is the need for these connections, these trail connections. The folks in my district and in the city who can go round and round can go south, go along, get over the Minnesota River, go along the river. Go either side, go up the Minnesota River, take the family camping for the weekend. It's just not there because we don't have those connections, and we haven't made them. We've had this outstate system, we've had the metro system, and they're not connected. So I really am grateful for this conversation. Look forward to moving this bill along.
Representative Aiken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dabney, I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. I think that your testifiers really demonstrated the need for a better understanding of the network of opportunities that we have here in Minnesota. I think that we've heard from several different people about kids being able to get outside and not getting outside. And I think that young people today, at least the millennials, they prefer experiences over items. And so having that information about where experiences can be and the opportunities that might be available to them, I think would be invaluable. And so I think that I appreciate what your bill's trying to do, and I think there's been some great discussion around how it can be improved, and I think that would be great. I look forward to hearing more about it.
Okay. Any no further member questions? Before I ask you for some final comments, Representative Dabney, I'd like to take the opportunity. Okay, backing up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thankfully, for the committee, most of my questions have been answered because they were, have you ever talked to resort owners? And apparently the answer is no, and I can tell you that from my experience with resort owners, the last thing in the world they want is another agency to deal with. We've already whittled them down from over 3,000 in the late 70s to under 800 today. Apparently, you haven't talked to Explore Minnesota. And a lot of the things that you have under duties, other agencies are already doing. And so I'm really very concerned about starting another agency. But there is no fiscal note. And on subsection 3, it looks to me like you're going to require every other agency to assist with this new agency. Is that correct?
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Green, there is no fiscal note at this time. This is a policy committee. But this is intended as a place where stakeholders come together. And that will include agencies because we need to have a space where we can work across agency lines and across jurisdictional lines and across stakeholder lines. And that's what the Office of Outdoor Recreation offers as an opportunity to the state so that those small resort owners that you're referring to can have more customers, because I think that's a big piece of what they need.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, I think that's the wrong direction to go. We've created Explore Minnesota to do that. I mean, that's what their job is to get out and promote the outdoors. And now we're going to create something else above that. So your fiscal note is actually going to have to incorporate in what all these other agencies are going to have to spend dealing with this new agency. And that in itself could be a problem. I only have one other question then, because the rest have been asked. It says in subsection 2, under 4, line 1.16, assist in establishing outdoor recreation businesses. What do you intend to do, or what are they going to intend to do? Because we have businesses there. And I'll tell you my concern, Representative Dabney, and I'm not trying to be pounding at you here, but every time the government gets involved in assisting a business, we lose more of them. And so if you're going to establish a business, is it going to be a state-run business? Are you going to assist businesses that are already there? Because I can tell you that a lot of times we'll assist a new business in getting started, and many times that business won't last more than 5 years, but by starting that new business, we've created competition for another one, and we harm existing businesses. So is there anything in here, or first of all, your businesses that you're starting, are they going to be state-run, or you intend to look for private businesses? And is there any goals here of shoring up existing businesses?
Representative Gavin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Green. If you read beyond to the end of 1.16, provide technical assistance with resources and opportunities for economic development. To me, that means economic growth that benefits Minnesotans. I think the goal is implicit there. Some businesses will succeed, some will fail. That's the nature of the free market system.
So then, just to follow up, Mr. Chair. So you're not really telling. Are you going to help private business, or do you intend to expand on state-run businesses, which we've seen a lot of, even in the DNR, who have now opened up parks and recreation areas that they said they weren't going to, that are running competition with our private resorts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Green. Well, we had the private industry here testifying in favor of the bill today. So I think that shows the interest in the growth in private industry here.
I'm looking here. I don't have any other names. Last call. Members. Okay. President Dabney, as I was saying a few minutes ago, before your final comments on the bill, I was taken by the words that you said early on here, and that is, if we continue to do things the way we're doing them, we can expect the same outcomes. And another consistency that I've heard across members here today and testifiers is we got to do better for our children and in many of our instances, grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And I think that your bill is intended to do that. So I wholeheartedly support your efforts, and I think you got a pretty good bill, and when you have a pretty good bill, you get beat up from every side one time or another, and you know that. Most of us know that here. But keep after it. So, final comments.
I don't think I could best what the chair just said. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present this bill. I'm excited for the opportunities that this bill portends for businesses in the state, for families in the state, for bringing in more people, because to me the essence of Minnesota is our rugged outdoor opportunities, and we need to preserve those, we need to enhance those, and we need to bring more people to those. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Dabney, and good fortune to you going ahead. With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 2220 be referred to Ways and Means with a recommended re-referral to Environment Finance. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Ayes have it.
Thank you much.
Bill has been re-referred. Thank you. Next, House File 2276. Representative Wozlik, to your bill, and I will move that House File 2276 be passed and referred to the General Register. So please proceed. Tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm just going to briefly talk about the bill, and then I want to get to my testifier who cleared her schedule for the day. So I'm just going to talk briefly about the bill and why we need it. House File 2276 bans the use of the chemical trichloroethylene in consumer products and in manufacturing processes as of January 1st, 2020. Several weeks ago, myself and members of the community that I live in heard from the MPCA that there's a company called Water Gremlin in Wiper Township that's been emitting high, much higher levels of TCE than they're permitted to into the air in our community, and they've been doing that for over a decade. So we have a lot of concerns about this issue and about TCE. The EPA actually started discussing banning TCE in 2017. They have a 75-page proposed rule document, and they are doing this because they recognize that TCE presents an unreasonable risk of injury to health. Significant non-cancer risks include birth defects, immunotoxicity, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, liver toxicity, heart defects, which have irreversible and lifelong impacts. There are alternatives to TCE readily available, so this is something that we feel we can do and we can get it done. I want to turn it over to my testifier, who is a member of the community from one of the impacted areas, to talk more from her perspective.
Thank you.
Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, I am Sherry Smith of White Bear Lake, and I'm here as the face and the voice of the White Bear Lake, White Bear Township, and Gem Lake communities. 8 weeks ago, I had never heard of TCE. I became aware of it when this water gremlin company notified our community of failures in their pollution control equipment. Their letter was literally the proverbial tip of the iceberg. The failures have resulted in toxic emissions that have occurred in my community, emissions that have far exceeded the permissible amounts, and they have been occurring potentially since 2002. It's a rapidly evolving situation. Literally 8 weeks ago, this all began. So there's still a lot of discovery and a lot of factual information coming forward. But what I can tell you is that despite the many questions that we have, and we do have a lot more questions than answers, at this point there is considerable and profound concern from the citizens in my area who've been exposed to these carcinogenic emissions, myself included, my family included. Initial estimates indicate that there are 5,500 people impacted. I've lived in my home for 18 years, and I've raised my three children there. I live less than a quarter of a mile from the plant. I now am going to worry if my children are going to develop cancer in 10 years, in 15 years. And again, the extent of the damage to families, to health, of the citizens in these areas, it's not known. The exposure has occurred, though. That part is factual. It's happened. What I'm asking is for your support for those. It's too late for my community. The exposure has happened, but I'm asking for your support so that this does not happen to others.
Thank you for your testimony. I'm going to ask if there are other testifiers on regarding 2276, House Bill 2276. Am I seeing people or no? Yeah. We've got a couple people on. You've got questions, Representative Blue? Okay, well, we'll get you on the list here. Welcome, and please introduce yourself and proceed.
My name's Paige Lee. I live in White Bear Lake. I lived a mile from Water Gremlin until 1994. And my concern is that the effects of this chemical could have gone even later, or what else was Water Gremlin putting into the system in the area? I know that a lot of my friends' parents work with lead products out of there, making lures, weights and stuff. So my concern is, and I moved back to White Bear and just found out about this too, like everybody else. And it's scary and frightening. And I just hope that you guys can support this bill today.
So. Thank you for your testimony.
Mm-hmm.
Other testifiers in the audience for or against House File 2276?
I'm not seeing anybody coming up, so I'm going to go to member questions. Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have anybody from the MPCA? We had a lot of questions that were asked by testifiers, and I think it's appropriate that we get a at least a general response to the concerns that were raised by the folks that testified here already.
I think we have someone here. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Jeff Smith. I'm the Director of the Industrial Division at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
And Representative Lewis, maybe put your question to this gentleman, if you will.
Well, yes, there were a number of issues that were raised. I guess the first one is do we know the extent of how this may or may not have affected people in the community from a health standpoint?
Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, we do have estimates of the release of TCE from the facility, and with those estimates from the company, we have done some air modeling, which would show the general area of impact, which has been shared with the community. The actual health impacts are really, that's an area that the Minnesota Department of Health has really taken some a hard look at, and they are here too if you'd like to ask some more health related questions.
Mr. Chair, in fact, I've got a couple more questions here, but obviously somebody from there would be certainly important that they bring their expertise to the table too. But if I could continue,
please.
My understanding is that this issue was self-reported by the company back last summer, and an announcement was made about 6 months later to the community as to that there was an issue there. Can you explain what transpired during those 6 months and why we had that length of a delay between coming back to the community with something that was self-reported?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, members, the company did approach the agency in July of 2018 under the auspices of a audit. And under that audit provision, when a company comes to the agency and says they've conducted an audit, if they can prove up their audit status and prove that they've not received economic benefit or that the impacts were not significant in terms of environmental and human health, then they get environmental, they get protection under that audit provision that we would not take enforcement action. However, they did not report back in July the extent and magnitude of the releases that had occurred. So while they did tell us that something was not operating the way it should, they did not provide us the information. The next 5 months between that point and the point that it was finally determined in January that this was a significant non-compliance event, that was us essentially prying out information from the company to tell us exactly what had happened. We had made numerous requests. We actually had done the first part of an enforcement action, formally saying you need to provide us that information for us to assess the impact and magnitude of the release. It was not until January of about 2019 that it was a Friday afternoon, the company finally provided us the information that the extended magnitude of the TCE releases was substantial, and then at that point it was determined that it was a significant potential impact to the community. At that point, we approached them immediately and said, you will shut down or we will shut you down, and then to their credit, they did voluntarily shut down at that point. But that time between July and January, the company did not provide us the required information.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Considering the magnitude of, I'm familiar enough with this chemical, it's really a problem. So I guess I'm just still scratching my head. What was the hesitancy? They're operating under a permit, correct, by MPCA, and you hold the string to that, don't you?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, we do issue a permit. The permits that we issue cover the emissions of TCE, and had the company followed the permit, and made sure their operation equipment, their pollution control equipment was operating the way it was designed to or supposed to, this would not have been a problem. Again, the permit lays out the requirements for the company to follow. If they follow those requirements and operate their facility correctly, the TCE emissions would not have had the impact, the potential impact that it had on the community. So, yes, we are the writers of the permit. We are the enforcers of the permit. But it relies on the company to provide us the information in a timely fashion. And if things are not working correctly, it's their obligation to tell us that they're not, and the community, that it's not working the way it's required and that they're following the permit.
I would just add real quick, Representative Lloyd, that in these instances, in my experience, I've got a little bit of experience with this, the industry or business is given wide latitude until they prove themselves a bad actor. And it's unfortunate. And some of us think that the regulation has to be tougher, but we get, you know, a lot of folks say, okay, you're over-regulating. And, well, so why do we have regulations and why aren't we tougher on them is our discussion today. But question perhaps, but we need to get back to the
Yeah, no, well, I appreciate that. Yes, there's we're over-regulating in some areas where we're just kind of clogging things up. On the other hand, it would just strike me that you hold an absolutely powerful tool with that permit, and any hesitancy to go in, regardless of what industry it is, when you've got a community at risk, you've got to figure out a way to do better on that. If we need to change some legislation there, that's a whole other discussion. That just seems an unbelievably long time to be patient when it appears to me that there was a problem voiced with the permit by the company's own admission. So anyway, but I would like to, if we could, some other very important questions, that if we've got something from the Department of Health that could just kind of provide us with where we're at today let folks know here where we're at on the human health side and what more important, what are we doing looking forward?
Very good. And I'd like to, if you would, please introduce yourself, but please keep your comments to the TCE and not the water gremlin, et cetera, et cetera. That's all I'm taking it, because we aren't debating water gremlin here. We're debating the toxicity of TCE and its use across Minnesota.
Yes. Good morning. My name is James Kelly. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Health and the Environmental Health Division, and it's our area that helps set criteria for chemicals like TCE with regards to human health and protecting against exposures to TCE in water or in this case often air. TCE is a known human carcinogen. It's been associated with kidney cancers, liver cancer potentially, and non-Hodgkin's lymphomas, and as well as been associated with effects on the immune system, and potentially, as was mentioned earlier, cardiac malformations in a developing fetus has been observed in animal studies. So it is considered by the EPA a known human carcinogen. It's a chemical that we certainly pay close attention to, and it's been unfortunately been the cause of many sources of environmental contamination from sites such as the former Twin Cities Army ammunition plant, where it impacted groundwater, et cetera. So it's a widespread and well-known contaminant. It's been one that's been studied for many, many years. Its toxicity is in dispute. And it's a chemical that, as I said, we are forced to deal with in many different instances from past industrial practices.
I guess, Mr. Chair, the thing I'd like to hear from is what can the community expect going forward relative to the Department of Health's work in this area?
Mr. Chairman, Representative,
yeah.
We'll be looking through our various statistics and health statistics for the communities that have been impacted or near the Water Gremlin facility, looking at the Minnesota Cancer Reporting System, looking at our birth defects registry, looking at our blood lead surveillance system, And we'll be reporting back to the community the findings of those evaluations so that they can be better informed as to what we do have in terms of data about a potential impact on the health of the population from these past exposures.
Representative Bickerkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to, I represent the community of Gem Lake, which is one of the communities that's impacted by the water gremlin situation. And I just, you know, to be clear, the MPCA is not the bad actor here. The bad actor here is a company that polluted our air for over a decade. And, you know, I think the size of the settlement regarding that was large because of that. But at the end of the day, this bill is about protecting other communities into the future, because as the testifier stated, it unfortunately it's too late for you and your kids to protect you from this. And that isn't fair. It isn't. And we, I think, you know, our duty is to the people of Minnesota and protecting those people. And I think that's what this bill is about, is banning the use of a chemical that doesn't need to be used to protect other families and other people's kids in the future. It's a toxic chemical. We know it's a known carcinogen. It has harmed people in our communities and has the potential to continue to harm people in our communities, and there are less toxic alternatives. And as Representative Wasilewicz stated at the beginning, at the federal level, they were on the edge of completely banning it just across the board at the federal level, and then we had a change in administrations at the beginning of 2017, and then the path that it was on to ban that chemical was stopped. And so it was continued to be used. So I think I'm really thankful to Representative Wasilewicz for taking the lead on this, and Senator Wiegers here as well. This is really important to all of our communities. Representative Fisher was here earlier. You know, the residents of our communities, I thank you all for being here and testifying, because even though it's not going to, this bill itself won't help your families, but it could help other families. And I think that's really what the focus needs to be. So I really suggest members support this bill and really, you know, read the language of the bill and what we're doing. This is really important. Thank you.
Representative Bolt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as a parent and a grandparent, I certainly can empathize. And so I feel sorry for families that are impacted and communities that are impacted. But I would have just a couple of questions. Help me to understand, it could be Department of Health, it could be MPCA, but help me to understand the size and scope, because I really see it's the chemical and it's the misuse of the chemical that are the issues here. So how common is TCE? How many businesses use it, rely on it, use it carefully and use it correctly? Are there other chemicals that can be used, and do they work as well? What kind of an impact would banning this have on established businesses that may be using it correctly today and carefully today?
Please, Mr. Smith, say your name again and proceed.
Jeff Smith, I'm the Director of the Industrial Division at the Pollution Control Agency. Mr. Chair, members, yes, it's a very common chemical, very used in a broader industry sense, by barrels, if you will, at larger industries, but also used in very small quantities in household situations. So brake cleaners, and other cleaning devices, anti-greasing, things that you can buy at your local hardware store all still contain TCE. So it is broadly used. The area that the MPCA knows about are the 70 to 80 air facilities that have air permits with us, but that is not, we don't have a comprehensive look on how TCE is being used at the local level or for companies or industries that use it that don't require a permit from us. If you're below a certain threshold, then you don't have a permit with us, and we would not know what those facilities are. We have been talking with the bill authors, and our concern is a little bit about the scope and magnitude and the timing of the bill. We are not positive that all of the 70 to the 80 facilities that we have There are substitutes for that. We think that most of those facilities, there are a substitute, but we're not positive. So the issue of banning it as soon as it's planned is probably a little bit, we still need to talk about that a little bit. But we do support the careful and thoughtful elimination TCE from the environment. It is highly toxic. There are some less toxic materials out there, and if we can apply those through the work of the agency and with our partners like the University of Minnesota, the MNTAP folks, we want to use all our resources to where it makes sense to get TCE out of the system.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I may just jump in on part of that question. I have been in contact with some business folks, and we are talking about some changes we can make to help this process move along and make it easier. But I want to be clear that the health of my constituents and the people of Minnesota is more important to me than the business profit, just to be clear. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure that we're doing this in a way that can help them do it, but also that prioritizes the health of Minnesotans. Also, there is, I forgot what my other point was, but there is some money from the settlement that's actually going to the University of Minnesota to help businesses transition off of TCE. There's also some sort of chamber fund that they have that they can use to help businesses transition off this as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that we're not rushing off with good intentions, because I can think of some examples over the years where products have been taken off the market, and then the replacement product doesn't work as well, so you end up using more, and that introduces challenges and problems all of its own. So sometimes the enemy that you know the most about is less of a threat than the enemy that you don't know as much about. So I just kind of want to wrap my head around some of the threats and challenges that we may be facing with that. And so do I hear that the PCA supports the concept but yet wants to be careful in how you proceed, or does the PCA support this bill as it is, or where are you at with it?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, members, we support the concept, and we're still kicking around the specific language to make sure that we're addressing your specific concern, and our conversations with the authors have been a willingness to participate in those ongoing conversations.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will just restate what Representative Wasloik just said. It is the duty of the PCA to help protect Minnesotans. And if at the end of the day, when we're weighing the pros and cons of this bill, the thing that absolutely must be our top priority is protecting the health of our constituents and their families. Thank you.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, and thank you for that, Representative Beckerman. I agree with you. Part of that duty also means having the most up-to-date and current health risk mm-hmm. limits. When, for Mr. Kelly, when was the last time the health risk limit was for this chemical was updated?
Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Madam Representative, we issued new health-based guidance for trichloroethylene in air that helped shape this work around the facility in late 2018, so just several months ago.
Unfortunately, I don't know, I was asking about health risk limits. A guidance is not enforceable, and what's worse, I think it discourages people from even looking because, so I was asking about health risk limits.
Mr. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative, our health risk limit for trichloroethylene was reissued or updated within the last several years. I couldn't tell you the specific date, but I believe it was in our last round of rulemaking, which was effective in, was either the 2016 or 2018 rulemaking round.
And it was made stricter at that time?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, it was.
Thank you.
Very good. See no more questions. And Representative Babian.
Just very quickly, Mr. Chair, I'm just curious to know about everyday products that we might have in our homes. What's the presence of TCE?
And to whoever wants to take that one. Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, TCE is in, as I said, there are many cleaners and degreasers that still contain TCE. You can buy them off the shelf, especially at the Napa Auto Parts and other auto parts store. That's a readily used area where that material is.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
So then would I mean, if I have this up my shelf at home after 20, does this impact me?
I didn't. Who's it to, Mr. Smith?
Well, probably the bill author or Mr.
Smith. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't catch all the questions. Okay. President Wadley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, can you repeat the question? I didn't hear the last part of your question.
Sure. So they referenced auto parts degreasers or whatever. So if the TCE is in a product that I have on the shelf in my workshop, does this bill impact me as an individual as well?
President Wadley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To my knowledge, it doesn't. I don't think we're going to mandate that everybody get rid of all the things that contain TCE that they have in their homes. But that is certainly part of the ongoing conversation we're having as well about, where is it the most toxic, what is the biggest concern, and how do we make sure that we're addressing those pieces of it as well in the bill.
Mr. Chair, to that question, on line 1.18, it's a ban of in commerce, so it would not apply. This specific bill as written right now would not apply to individual household use.
Thank you for that clarification. I see no further questions. All I got to do is say that and then I get one. Representative Lloyd.
Just one really, really quick question to MPCA. Do you have any concept of the costs associated with executing this as to, are you able to handle that out of Hyde? And we're talking about a pretty broad thing here.
Mr. Smith, real quick, please.
Mr. Chair, members, we have not put pen to paper yet and done estimates on that. We need to understand the scope before we could do that.
Very good. Okay. Any closing comments on your bill, Representative Wadley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, for hearing this bill today. I think it's really important, as folks have said today, that our job as legislators is really to protect our Minnesotans' health. And so I think this is a good step in the right direction to do that and to ensure that we're not having cancer-causing chemicals out there in the environment damaging people's health and causing issues. Thank you.
With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2276 be sent to the General Register. Motion before us. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The bill's on its way. Okay. Moving right along here. Representative Hansen.
Yep.
We have your bill, House File 1845. Please, tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would move House File 1845 be referred to...
I have it Ways and Means.
To Ways and Means. Members, this is a wastewater treatment plant operators bill that is an agency bill from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. It is designed to reflect changes in the operators to try to take into account experience as we're providing for folks who want to enter into this position. And I have with me members from the Pollution Control Agency here.
Very good. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Alexis Donath. I'm from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 1845, and thank you to Representative Hansen for carrying this bill. This bill creates additional pathways for people to become certified as wastewater treatment plant operators at Class C and D facilities, which are those facilities that are smallest and least complex. In MPCA's outreach with Minnesota cities, the agency has heard that some small cities have difficulty hiring and retaining qualified wastewater operators. This bill addresses that problem by adding a new way for people to qualify for operator certification at Class C and D facilities based on their education and experience. It is a win-win solution that addresses a workforce problem for cities and opens the door for more people to be able to enter this career pathway. Minnesota has two post-secondary training programs for wastewater treatment technology at St. Cloud Technical and Community College and Vermilion Community College in Ely. Students who complete one of these two programs are already able to be certified as a Class D wastewater operator at one of the state's smallest facilities right out of college. This bill would enable graduates of those programs to be certified as Class C wastewater operators, so slightly larger facilities, with 1 year of related experience. In addition, the bill allows for individuals with a bachelor's degree in certain engineering fields or a physical or biological science to become certified operators at a Class D facility, the small ones, once they have gained 6 months of experience. Thank you for considering this bill, and I'm happy to stand for questions.
Very good. And is there another testifier sitting there? So we would take his testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Joel Peck. I'm a municipal liaison with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I just want to support what Alexis has told you this morning, that we do hear from many communities who are forecasting some workforce challenges in wastewater. You heard from large facilities and small facilities alike who are having some difficulties in filling positions that are vacant because of retirements or because an operator might gain enough hours and step up to the next largest facility where they might possibly make a few more dollars. But it is an issue that we've heard in our clean water discussion series, which is a series of meetings that we hold with water stakeholders, and we've heard from many individual communities and from advocacy groups as well that additional pathways into the field are needed.
Very good. Questions, members?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess one of the things that obviously this is a huge impact on the cities, and I would assume that they're the folks that are coming and are concerned about this. Do we have anybody from the city, Coalition of Minnesota Cities, that could speak to the need here?
Please introduce yourself for the record and see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. We started discussing this issue, I think, most directly last summer with the Legislative Water Commission when they went kind of on a deep dive into wastewater treatment concerns broadly. The idea was brought up there, and we very much appreciate the author's effort to bring this forward. We think this is a nice first step to deal with trying to get more people qualified to work at these small city facilities. There's other issues that I think Mr. Robbins will refer to on retention and other things. It's hard to keep people in these jobs. And we also are working in the longer term on looking at some of the higher skill positions within our facilities and how we can possibly help get more people qualified and interested in qualifying for those positions. Different issue. We support this legislation very strongly. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Yes. I'm James Robbins, representing the Minnesota Association of Small Cities. Those are the cities 5,000 and under, which total 250,000 residents of the state. We're just here to support this legislation. It's a piece in the toolbox. We will need to do more over future years to deal with retention, hopefully look at a grant program with the training that includes a commitment to stay at a facility for some period of time would be very helpful to us, because retention is as big an issue as the vacancies. But this is a great step forward, and we appreciate you bringing it forward, Representative Hansen. Thank you.
See, we have another testifier. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Bill Black with Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just want to let you know that MMUA also supports this legislation. It's been involved with the PCA in the discussions, and they've been fruitful, and appreciate your support for the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't have any other questions. Any other testifiers out there for or against the bill? Seeing none, Representative Hansen, final comments, and then I need to advise you that I advised you wrong on your motion to Ways and Means, and if you would amend that to go to government operations, please.
Mr. Chair, I would move to refer this to the Government Operations Committee, and I appreciate your support.
Very good. Thank you. So the motion is before us. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion approved.
Thank you.
Right. Representative Wagenius?
Thank you.
Got about 3 minutes for your bill, Representative Wagenius.
All right.
Oh, we got more than that.
Okay, I would like to move it and move to Environment Finance.
Very good. Please proceed. Tell us about your bill.
Just as a way of background, Minnehaha Creek runs through my district, and it has been, it's not a healthy creek anymore. And it's because it is so high with so much rainwater. And when you ask the folks who manage the watershed district what is going on, they say, well, we just had a lot of rain. And I, of course, was looking at the statute to see if we were supposed to, the watershed districts were supposed to look at the effects of a lot more rainfall, and our statute doesn't include that. So one of the things I have done in this bill is in two places told the watershed districts, and you'll see it on 3.8 and again, well, there are two places, yes, on 4.6 that provides recommendations. This is one of the things that watershed districts should provide recommendations to improve groundwater quality and quantity and stormwater management from high rainfall events. So I'm asking the watershed district to look at high rainfall events. As I was looking at that particular issue, I added a few more updates to this language, including not just looking at water quality, but looking at water quantity. That's on the first page. We have all accepted that we need, watershed districts need to think about slowing water down. That language is in here, too. So this is, that is my quickest ability to describe this bill, but I would be glad to answer questions if people have them.
Okay, and I'm going to ask for testifiers real quick. If there are any other testifiers on this bill, House File 2011, please make your way up here, and I'm not seeing anybody coming. But please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Emily Javens. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts. And as we read through this bill, it does seem to be a well-intended bill. We do have some questions about the execution and the financial impacts that it would have. But one thing I did want to point out, that watershed districts are voluntary organizations. They are formed by petition, and they have 14 reasons. If you look on page 6, there's 14 reasons currently that they can say they would like to be formed. They pick one of those or several of those, and then that's what they work on. So it's great that you would like to, or that Representative Wagenius would like to see a 15th reason added. We have no objections to that, but we do have some strong objections to lines 6.25 through 2.7. What it's saying is, yeah, there's 15 reasons you can form, but once you form, you have to work on the 15th one. There are many of the rural watershed districts form to work on flooding issues, to build a large impoundment that would serve multiple counties, and that made perfect sense. And once they've been around for a while, now they are working on other areas. They're working on water quality. But if you were to say, if you want to form, you have to work on that, I think that could have some unintended consequences to stop other organizations from forming. And so, but So we would like to see some changes before we could support this, but we would be happy to work with the author to address some of those issues.
I think that
I think that's a
good discussion to have in finance. So we'd be pleased to work on that when we get to finance. Because I'm looking at the clock.
And just so you know, I'm going to say this now so we have it in front of us. I'm advised that the bill needs to be referred to Ways and Means, not finance, right?
Yes, anyway, exactly.
Okay.
Ways and Means with a recommendation for finance.
Member questions? Well, it must be a darn good bill, I guess, huh? So, final comments.
I appreciate your support, members.
Very good. So the motion in front of us then is that House File 2011 be referred, be passed and referred to, Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Motion's in front of us. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you.
Motion carried. Thank you, members. We stand adjourned.